Bristol, Vermont, WXLJ, Whitehall, Glens Falls. It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Tuesday, April 30th. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
A college and a mall in upstate New York have closed in the last week. We'll have the details coming up.
Dahawes was a booming mining town built deep in the Adirondack Wilderness. Then, in the 1960s, it disappeared.
It's difficult to think about this because you can't go back and you can't even stand next to that location because everything has been moved.
Also, it's migration season for birds. We'll find out what New York is doing and what you can do to help them on their way.
Plus, a North Country love poem from Ama Kadjo ahead of her talk at SUNY Potsdam this afternoon.
I'm super looking forward to being in the room and to sharing poems. It feels like a sacred act.
And what's that sound? We've got a sound quiz. All that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Fisher, Bissette, Muldowney, and McArdle, attorneys and counselors at law with offices in Malone, Tupper Lake, and Saranac Lake. 800-941-5001. And Adirondack Foundation, connecting people, ideas, and resources to improve lives and expand opportunities throughout the Adirondack region. Details at adirondackfoundation.org.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. A once bustling shopping mall in Messina has closed. According to the Watertown Daily Times, the St. Lawrence Center Mall locked its doors to the public last week. It's now advertising itself as a 600,000-square-foot industrial and warehouse complex. The mall opened in 1990 at a time when manufacturing jobs powered the Messina economy, and a strong dollar attracted Canadian customers by the thousands. Anchor stores like TJ Maxx, Sears, and Bon-Ton closed or moved outside the mall in the 2010s. In 2017, a community effort to revive sagging traffic led to local crafters and entertainment vendors moving in, but that proved to not be enough to reverse the mall's downward trend. The Shapiro Group, a Montreal-based company, bought the mall in 2018 with plans to renovate and attract a movie theater and sports bar, but those things never materialized. One department store, JCPenney's, will remain open with doors directly accessible from the parking lot.
Another liberal arts college in upstate New York is shutting down. Wells College in the Finger Lakes town of Aurora in Cayuga County announced Monday it will cease operations at the end of the spring semester. The college was founded in 1868 and was an all-female school until 2005. In a letter to the campus community, President Jonathan Gibraltar and the board chair said the college doesn't have the financial resources to continue operating. The letter cited the shrinking pool of undergraduate students nationwide, COVID challenges, and inflation as the main factors. Wells has contracted with Manhattanville University in Westchester County to offer students to transfer and finish out their degrees. Wells is the latest institution upstate New York to succumb to strong financial headwinds in higher education. Cazenovia College in central New York closed last year. The College of St. Rose in Albany is also closing this spring. In the North Country, most of the region's colleges and universities are struggling to close big budget deficits. SUNY Potsdam and Clarkson universities have already laid off staff and ended degree programs.
History is all around us, but sometimes it can be hard to see unless you know what to look for and where. Today, the story of a town built deep in the Adirondack Wilderness. It's not there anymore because it got picked up and moved somewhere else. Anna Williams-Bergen has this North Country at Work story.
During World War II, the U.S. used titanium to strengthen the outer shells of its warplanes. But this important material proved hard to come by.
the United States was having difficulty getting titanium, and the richest strike of titanium at that time was in the Adirondack Mountains.
That's Joan Burke. She's the director of the Newcomb Historical Museum. That titanium was in the middle of the Adirondack Wilderness, just south of the High Peaks. But it was wartime. Burke says the government was willing to make mining it worth a company's time, to the tune of $5 to $8 million.
The U.S. government made a huge investment, and National Lead Company took that investment and built the mine.
National Lead bought the land in 1941 and started building a community called Tahoe. The first task was making it into a place they could mine, clearing trees, building roads, and bringing in electricity. And they needed workers. National Lead started recruiting across the East Coast, including in Ogdensburg, where Burke's father worked in a paper mill.
The story in my family was that some of the recruiters stayed outside these plants and just proposed much better salaries than anybody could have gotten anyplace else. They had to give them better salaries because they were giving up their lifestyles to go to some place that was really remote.
The strategy worked. By around 1946, Tahoe had about 1,000 residents. To get there today, you have to drive down a winding, potholy dirt road outside Newcomb. It's just a few minutes from Upper Works, a popular southern trailhead for High Peaks hiking. These days, Burke says, Tahoe isn't much to look at.
Okay, across the river now is a fairly large hill, almost a mountain of rock that wasn't there before. It's across Lake Sanford. It used to be Sanford Lane. Across the bridge, you would find a store, a garage, and several houses.
You would have found a settlement tucked between all these mountains, bursting with life.
It was a close-knit community because everything was close. My family lived in a 6-family apartment. There were several apartments near us. It was not what most people think of as a mining town. We did not live in decrepit buildings.
Tahoe was densely populated, but it was also almost completely secluded. That didn't mean it was boring. Burke says town life was busy, with a YMCA and lots of activities for children and adults alike.
As a child, I never went any place that I didn't know all the people I met. I mean, I had many, many parents, and everybody looked out for children. It was comforting. Maybe that says it all.
Plus, residents had forests, mountains, and the Hudson River in their backyards.
It's the Adirondacks. I mean, it's quiet. We were like 10 feet from the wilderness, and we could do anything. I mean, we often walked, not on a highway or not on a sidewalk. We walked on trails to get things. We think of Newcomb now as remote, but Newcomb is on a highway. In Tahoe, there's one way in, one way out.
National Lead owned all the homes in Tahoe, so every family had someone who worked at the mine. Burke remembers the familiar whistle that signaled shift change 3 times a day. Mining and processing titanium meant there was dust on everything, everywhere. Burke says the best places to live were those furthest away from the mine.
Our apartment house was the last one to be constructed, and so we were far away. The big thing was my mother could hang out clothes without having them get dusty.
Almost as quickly as Tahoe was settled, it disappeared. National Lead had found a new, rich strike of titanium that ran right underneath parts of the community. If they were going to mine it, everyone had to get out of the way. In 1963, nearly all of the buildings at Tahoe were picked up and moved to nearby Newcomb.
They moved 60-some homes. They moved 5 apartment buildings. They moved 2 churches. They moved a store. I mean, it just kept going. You know, one of the apartment houses was too big. They sliced it, and they did it with chainsaws. They just cut it in half. It was done terrifically fast.
The public bridge that takes you over the water to Tahoe is out, so you can't even get to where it once was. From across the water, Burke says the area is unrecognizable. The few buildings that couldn't be moved were buried in a massive hill. Under the earth sits the YMCA and a school, built just a few years before the move. Trees have grown back where there used to be roads and houses. Burke still remembers her childhood here vividly, but she says it's hard to come back. Now she can't even orient herself in a place she used to know like the back of her hand.
It's difficult to think about this because you can't go back and you can't even stand next to that location because everything has been moved.
The mine at De Haas eventually stopped being economically viable. It closed for good in 1989. Today, a stone company owns the land, but the legacy of De Haas is still visible, if you know where to look. Most of the homes moved out of De Haas still stand in Newcomb today. For North Country Public Radio's North Country at Work project, this is Anna Williams-Bergen in Newcomb.
North Country at Work is a long-running project of NCPR that collects photos and stories about working life in our region. If you have a work story you'd like to share, email us work@ncpr.org.
Listening to Northern Lights right here on North Country Public Radio. It's 11 minutes past 8. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up, a poem, a song to preview a concert in Glens Falls next week, and we'll see if we can stump Todd with a sound quiz. All that's coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music by Eddie Lawrence out of Moira. Broadcast of Northern Light is supported by Long Run Wealth, an SEC-registered investment advisor in Lake Placid, providing comprehensive wealth management, retirement, and financial planning solutions, longrunwealth.com. Clouds, showers, maybe an isolated thunderstorm today and tonight. Highs in the 50s, near 60, and light winds out of the east-northeast.
Officers from Jefferson County's Sheriff's Department were involved in a shooting last weekend. According to a release from the Sheriff's Office, two deputies were called to a domestic incident in the town of Lyme around 4 a.m. Saturday. Before they reached the house, a man allegedly ran down the driveway towards the officers with a weapon, despite being told to put the weapon down. Both officers fired shots at the man and then detained him. The man is in stable condition at the hospital in Watertown. The case has been turned over to the New York State Police.
People have donated tens of thousands of dollars on behalf of the two climbers involved in last week's fatal accident in Alaska. Forest Ranger Robbie Mikas died in that accident. Her climbing partner, Melissa Orzakowski, survived but is in critical condition at a hospital in Anchorage. Emily Russell reports.
Robbie Mikas and Melissa Orzakowski were ice climbing in Denali National Park last Thursday. They were ascending a steep technical route on Mount Johnson. According to the National Park Service, they both fell about 1,000 feet. Mikas, who was 52 years old, was killed in the accident. She leaves behind an 11-year-old daughter and a former wife who live in Keene Valley. A GoFundMe page was set up over the weekend. As of Tuesday morning, it had raised more than $35,000 for Mikas' family. Someone also set up a GoFundMe page for Melissa Orzakowski. Orzakowski is 30 years old and had lived in the Adirondacks for years, though recently moved to California. Hundreds of people have donated to cover Orzakowski's medical bills as well as travel and expenses. As of Tuesday morning, that GoFundMe page had raised more than $40,000. Emily Russell, North Country Public Radio.
Construction on an apartment complex for lower and middle-income families in Saranac Lake is back on track after delays. According to the Adirondack Daily Enterprise, the Saranac Lofts construction was put on hold last spring when the state's Department of Environmental Conservation found that the soil was contaminated with gasoline. The site formerly housed a fuel station, auto shop, and woodworking factory. The developers, the Kearney Group, say the site is now clean. The DEC says the process is still ongoing. The lofts are partially funded by the State Division of Housing and Community Renewal, which helps fund low-income housing development. Construction is expected to be completed next winter.
This is the time of year that birds migrate, moving from their warmer winter homes back north. To aid their journey and to cut down on bird deaths, New York has ordered all state buildings and offices to dim or turn off non-essential lights at night. The program is called Lights Out, and the public can get involved too. Amy Feiereisel reports.
Starting in 2022, New York has required state buildings and offices to dim or turn off non-essential lights at night from April 15th through the end of June. That's when many birds migrate, and they mostly do so at night.
Thousands of birds every evening moving through the sky.
That's Dan Rosenblatt, a wildlife biologist with the Department of Environmental Conservation. He says many birds use light cues to navigate on their journey.
A whole suite of the species actually use stars to help navigate across the night sky. But particularly when there's cloud cover and they can't see the sky, when the sky is not clear, human-generated light on the ground seems to distract them and essentially send them off course.
There's a couple ways that artificial lights mess with migrating birds. Human-created light can mimic the night sky and confuse birds that navigate via the stars. Lights can also attract birds. Rosenblatt's seen that firsthand when he worked on Long Island at a well-known lighthouse.
On particularly cloudy evenings during the spring migratory period, you might get 80 to 100 dead birds at the base of the lighthouse. They're traveling at 30 or 40 miles an hour as they're heading towards it. They don't see the structure underneath the light. It's kind of like night blindness, and they actually just collide directly with the structure.
Finally, changes in human architecture have posed problems, specifically large glass-covered buildings that reflect the sky at night. The official state effort to reduce lights is part of a much larger movement, says Rosenblatt, which the National Audubon and research groups like the Cornell Lab of Ornithology are involved in, too.
They all basically look for volunteers wherever they can. So whether it's independent businesses, whether it's folks that own a lot of real estate, or individual landowners.
Really, everybody can participate, said Rosenblatt.
And that's both, you know, lights inside a house, external lights, floodlights, that sort of thing. Even like the lights on a ball field that, as soon as that Little League game is over, if those lights could go off.
Northern New York might seem like small potatoes when compared to big metropolises like New York City or Buffalo. But in a sea of dark, light can be even more disorienting, said Rosenblatt. He said a city like Plattsburgh, without much light pollution around it, can be dangerous on a cloudy night.
If the birds are heading, you know, in the vicinity of the Plattsburgh area, and you wind up getting one of these fronts moving through that has really low cloud cover, the birds will kind of move below the clouds. And that's a scenario where having that sort of singular city might actually be sort of like a stronger attraction for them. But the flip side of that is if a city like Plattsburgh participated in this program, theoretically, that would clear the area for a much larger area for the birds to be able to move through.
Rosenblatt also wanted to point out that the vast majority of bird collisions with buildings happen within 30 feet of the ground, many of them with large picture windows that are perceived by birds as open spaces. So every house or building in rural areas has a role to play in keeping birds safe. Rosenblatt said you can visually break up windows and make bird collisions less likely to happen.
Folks like using like decals or streamers and things like that are hung up in the window. So it basically just breaks up that reflection of the open space behind them.
He also warns against putting bird feeders very close to one's home, especially the new bird feeders that stick to windows via a suction cup. Amy Feiereisel, North Country Public Radio.
This story was suggested to NCPR by Eileen Josh from Saranac Lake. Thank you so much, Eileen. And if you have a story suggestion, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us through our texting club. Text the word TIP, that's T-I-P, to 315-978-6277. That's 315-978-6277.
listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, a sound quiz, a poem, and a Glens Falls concert preview coming up. Then after that, it's the Wild Tom Turkey on Bird Note just ahead at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
At this point, the Weather Service has the word showers in the forecast right through next Monday, with scattered light showers, maybe an isolated thunderstorm today, highs 50s, near 60, light winds out of the east-northeast, cloudy, light showers likely tonight, a low around 40, and then tomorrow and Thursday, scattered showers, highs in the 50s tomorrow, highs low 60s on Thursday, could see a high near 70 on Friday. Yeah, and scattered showers through the weekend, too, at this point, with highs in the 60s Saturday and Sunday. Right now, cloudy skies, 50 degrees in Canton.
So if you listen to Northern Light quite a bit, you know that we have this sort of semi-regular segment called a sound quiz. We haven't done one in a while, but Elsa Schisler from Indian Lake sent in a sound for us. And so what this is that listeners or myself will record a little bit of sound and send it in, and we'll play it on the air for Todd to guess, to see if he can guess what it is. He hasn't heard the sound before, and then he takes a guess on the air. Okay, here's that sound from Elsa Schisler.
It's something outside.
Yes, the tweeting's giving it away, maybe.
Yeah, something outside. Something knocking against something. Is it a bird?
Yes, it is a bird.
Is it a woodpecker?
Not a woodpecker, no.
Is it a chicken?
Not a chicken, no.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
Smaller than a bread box.
Is it trying to get out of something?
No, not trying to get out of something.
Is it trying to get into something?
not really trying to get into something either.
I give up. It sounds like something pecking on something metal.
You're so close, Todd. You're so close. Elsa, I think you got him. I think you stumped him. I'm gonna call it. So Elsa Schisler at Indian Lake sent this in. She says this is the sound of a mama robin packing new mud in an old nest to shape it for this year's babies. The nest is right above their kitchen window on the ledge outside of the attic window vent. And so part of that sound that you're hearing, you can hear her wings brushing against, like, the cloth covering on their vent. And she says it's sort of been like an apartment building since the Phoebe's nest above that, just under the roof. And you can even hear them calling. And but she says both birds have nested there for years. And so they always like to enjoy them, seeing the robin packing new mud in an old nest. Elsa, well done. I think that you got him. And if you've got sound to share, we would love to hear from you. Grab your phone, grab your voice memo or recording app, put it right up next to where that sound is, and just share it with Monica at ncpr.org. That's Monica at ncpr.org. Do not send it to news@ncpr.org. Todd will see it. We can't have that. Yeah, got it. Yes. His lips are sealed. Send it to monica@ncpr.org, and you just might hear it on the air. And if it does make it to the air, we'd love to thank you for trying to stump Todd by sending you a Northern Light mug. Elsa, I think, has gotten one already, because she's really good with these sound quizzes. But we'd love to hear from you, too. Record it and send it to monica@ncpr.org. Lots of events going on throughout the community these days, including this afternoon in Potsdam. Award-winning poet Amma Kodjo is coming to SUNY Potsdam for the Loco Arts Festival. She's part of a small collective of Black poets called Poets at the End of the World, and their goal is to continue in the legacy of civil rights era resistance poets like June Jordan and Lucille Clifton. And Kodjo writes a lot about Black bodies and connection and intimacy. And we've got a poem of hers to share before the event.
Now, this is, I think it's certainly good for your audience because I'm sure they have had encounters with deer. So this poem is called The Deer. Walking alone in a forest, I came upon a deer. This was not a vision. It faced me on its four thin legs, unmoved as a cave painting brushed by light. I made myself still. I spoke to it softly. I can't remember what I said. The deer regarded me as a god would, eased by my astonishment. Then, slowly, I moved closer. And the deer did not run. By now, you know it was love I walked toward, not the deer, but what hung in the space between us. I know it was love because as I held my breath, the deer took a few steps toward me before bounding into the camouflage of branches and leaves.
I'm snapping for you over here.
There is something super special, I mean, about poetry and poetry reading, which inevitably I also say whenever I'm giving a reading because it just feels so true of the moment because people get very quiet and they're listening in a way that I think is actually quite rare in our culture. It really feels like we're eating and drinking something that we need, like nutrients that our bodies need when I'm in spaces that are like a poetry reading. So I'm super looking forward to being in the room and to sharing poems. It feels like a sacred act.
Poet Amma Kodjo is doing a poetry reading at SUNY Potsdam at 4 o'clock this afternoon as part of the Loco Arts Festival. Find more at ncpr.org/calendar.
We're going out now on a little bit of music from Joy Clark. This New Orleans-based singer-songwriter shares songs about peace and the power of love. She's worked with Alison Russell, Annie DeFranco, and the Indigo Girls. And next week, she's doing a solo show in Glens Falls at the Folk Life Center at the Crandall Public Library. This is her song, Guest.
How to hide, press my feelings into places so that everything I love is safe. I was torn, the push and pull, trying every combination to be present and protected and alive. Here's my story, I confess, I've been living like a guest.
That's Northern Light for this Tuesday, the last day of April. Stay tuned for more of Morning Edition.
Morning Edition does continue in just a minute. Then join us after that for the Marketplace Morning Report between 8:51 and 9 o'clock. I'm Monica Sandreski.
I'm Todd Moe. Thanks for listening. Be well.